Hello, I am sorry I disappeared for a few weeks. I have been really, really busy. There's been lots going on, all very positive, but I just took a little break from the podcast. But I'm just on to say that I'm about to post the 40th episode of the Solo Power podcast. It was actually this time last year in April 2023 that I launched the podcast. It has been a little labor of love of mine. I've really enjoyed the incredible people that I have met on the podcast, people who have given so graciously of their time to come on and be my guests. I know that their stories have inspired my listeners, be that in solopreneurism or to go out and travel or to be happy being single or to go on some solo adventures. So it's been such a journey. We have been an award-nominated podcast. We have been a sponsored podcast. I've had my dream guests come on already. So really, it's a question of where do we take it from here? I think I'm going to take, I know I've just taken a few weeks break, but I think I'm going to take another little break. I'm going to reassess. I'm going to have a think about the types of guests that I want to have on. And I am probably going to come back with a bang in the summertime. So I'm going to come back in June and have a whole load of amazing episodes all lined up and ready to go. So this will be the last episode for a while. And to celebrate that, I'm delighted to say that I have been gifted a fantastic solo spa package, a solo day spa package by the lovely people in the Powerscourt Springs. Powerscourt Springs is Ireland's first and only health farm. I myself was there a couple of weeks ago and I absolutely loved it. It is just in County Wicklow and it is in a beautiful location. They've got a gorgeous llamas on the land as well, which I got to feed. But the Powerscourt Springs spa itself is so tranquil, it's so peaceful. They do lots of yoga, forest bathing, meditation, incredible spa treatments. And to celebrate the 40th episode, I have a solo spa day package to give away to one of the lucky listeners. So I would love you to send me a message on Instagram. You can find me on Ariana_Dunn_. And drop me a message on my Instagram, maybe like my Instagram page, maybe you can share the solo-powered Spotify or share solo-powered on your Instagram. You know, the more shares we have, the better the podcast does, so we really appreciate that. And yeah, if you would like your chance to win a solo spa package in County Wicklow in Ireland, with thanks to the people at the Powerscourt Springs, drop me a message. I hope you enjoy this 40th episode. I will be back. Please reach out to me with any ideas, suggestions of people who you think would be really good guests. Would love to hear your feedback on the podcast and would love to hear any words of praise and or criticism that you might have. I'm open to learning and seeing where this journey takes me. So far to all of you for listening, it's been an amazing journey. I'm so, so grateful. We have people from all over the world listening and it's been such a joyous thing to be able to create something from scratch and to have people tune in and listen and hopefully make solo journeys, solo travel, sitting in a restaurant, going out by yourself, just doing things on your own and feeling empowered, that little bit more okay. So thank you so much and I'll see you soon. Hello and welcome to another episode of Solo Powered with me, Ariana Dunn. This is a podcast that celebrates doing things solo, whether that be solo travel, solo business, solo journey to parenthood, single by choice, solo adventures, or solo pursuits of passion. Remember, this is not about living a lonely life. This is about living the most full life on your terms. As anyone who follows me on Instagram will know, I was getting very excited when I first launched this podcast, seeing countries around the world light up, showcasing to me that I had listeners in various different locations around the world. I made it a mission of mine to have a country light up in all 7 continents, which happened very soon after the podcast launched. So it might be no surprise to know that the majority of my listeners are in Ireland, but the second most listened country in the world is not the UK, which some might expect being our closest neighbour, but is in fact our other neighbour, the US of A, where a third of the solo powered listeners hail from. So I'm very excited to have my next guest, which is the second American that I've had on the podcast after Dr. Peter McGraw. And in fact, it is another doctor, but this time a female powerhouse of a doctor, Vivian Vo. Vivian is a doctor specializing in podiatry, but she also is a yoga teacher. She's also a life coach, and she specializes in empowering females, people of color, indigenous people, black people. Is something that she's really passionate about in terms of empowering people to step into their truth and live their most authentic lives. Vivian actually reached out to me after the podcast was recommended to her by a friend who had recently become single and had been listening to the podcast. And so Vivian has lots of different things that she's kind of keen to talk about today, including her own journey and the work that she does as a coach, but also just her own experiences and some tips and advice for anyone out there who might be looking at their solo life and thinking they might want to branch out and start doing things on their own. So Vivian, it is so wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
And thank you for having me, and such a great introduction. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you. So yeah, as I say, you know, like you reached out, you know, tell me a little bit about sort of the conversation that you had with your friend about the podcast and kind of like what kind of sparked your attention in terms of wanting to come on as a guest and sharing your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I would identify myself prior to my 6 years of being single as a serial monogamous, and then my friend who recommended this podcast is actually an even bigger serial monogamous. I don't think I've ever known her as being single. And she became single, I think, in the last 1 or 2 years. I hope she's okay with me sharing this story. But yeah, there's been a lot of struggles that she's having in this new adventure of hers, like living on her own, traveling alone, things like that. And then she just suggested this podcast and just letting me know that this is something that really helped her, having just a reframe about being single. And I would say, same as me, I wish I had something like this when I was single, and also just continue to do solo things even now that I'm married.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important. I shared something on my Instagram yesterday that somebody had put up, and it said, you know, it's not that I'm happy being single, but what it is that I'm happy that I've been able to reframe how I feel about being single, and that I'm not feeling like there's something wrong, or that I'm lacking, or that I'm somehow less than. It's actually embracing the solo life and living life to the fullest without actually feeling like something is missing. And I think that's what the important thing is. It's not shutting out love, or it's not, you know, repelling love, but it's just saying, I don't have to spend every waking minute thinking about I'm going to be in a relationship, which I think a lot of single people go through when they exit a relationship or when they're looking for love, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Being in a relationship, I think we consider the other person so much that when we become single, all the decision rests on us. Like, what do I want to do in this moment? Rather than that indecision of asking another person, like just going back and forth, what do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? Or like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And it's just, what do I want to do? And sometimes, so during my time of being single, what I wanted to do was go to the museum, and I had to learn, okay, can I go by myself? Mm. It's like a blizzard outside. This was during when I was in New York. It's a blizzard. Can I step out and go to this museum because that's what I want to do, without questioning who else? So just tuning in to my intuition and like my desires and letting myself fulfill my own desires.
And so you did. I mean, you did step out into that power, and you did kind of go and do things on your own. Talk to us a little bit about that in terms of you exploring that world, because I've talked about it here before. Like, I'm so far on the other side of solo life now that for me it's almost crazy that you wouldn't be able to go on your own, or that you wouldn't go to the cinema on your own, or go to a restaurant on your own, or go traveling on your own. Like, it to me it's the most incredible experience. But I meet people all the time, and they're like, I would never eat in a restaurant on my own. I would never go out on my own. I would never go traveling on my own. My journey was so interesting that I was invited on the radio and on TV here to talk about my solo travel trip with my dog, whereas I'm like, but like, surely it's just normal, right? So talk to me about, like, I suppose your experience of going out and doing all of those things. How did you find it?
Yeah. So when I decided to move to New York, I actually, and I'm just going to give a trigger warning for anyone who experienced like domestic violence. I just was still in an abusive relationship, and I was still in that relationship when I decided to move to New York, and he was pissed. Like we had one of our worst fights, and I still decided to go. I was like, I knew this is for me, and I knew I wanted to be in New York. And eventually we broke up, fortunately. So I was in New York as a single person, and I would say New York is an excellent place to be single because so many people do things alone there. But I've never done it, so I had role models of people who ate alone, who went to museums alone, and things like that. So it's like, even though I did things alone, it felt like I always had someone to talk to in my solo journeys. And in some ways, a lot of people are more willing to talk to me, I notice, when I'm by myself versus when I'm with my now husband. And it was just a good time because I realized that I don't need another person to do things. And a lot of times people say like, oh, I need someone to be complete, or it feels I don't feel whole. But I had to feel whole and complete on my own. And that was my journey, being in New York and also traveling by myself. I also did the same. And at first I asked all my friends, do you want to go on this trip with me? Everybody had their own schedule. It's like a mess trying to arrange. So I just said, you know, I have this time off. I'm going to do this by myself. And I did. And I did it twice. People
Brilliant.
thought I was crazy. But it was such a great experience because I knew I could plan, figure out transportation, hotels, everything. And again, I found the same thing in my solo trips in Asia and Europe, where people are more willing to talk to you when you're a solo traveler. So I felt like I got to speak to the locals more, and I got to speak to other travelers more when I was solo traveling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you 100% do. And when you're in a couple or when you're with friends, you're focused, as you should be, on your partner or on your friends. I mean, that's why you're away with them and you're talking to them and you're interested in them. But when you're on your own, you're much more open to the possibility of meeting other people and talking to other people. And I love going to restaurants and sitting at the bar and chatting to the bartenders and finding out about their life in the country that you're in. And it's so interesting and exciting, and you have conversations that you just simply wouldn't be having with people if you were there with somebody else. I was away at the weekend with a friend, and we had a wonderful weekend, and it was lovely. But I also know that I was away by myself on a solo trip recently, and that was also lovely. So it's not to say that one is better than the other. It's just they're two different experiences. And I think I just know so many people who are solo who aren't getting to have those amazing experiences because they are afraid of traveling on their own, or they're afraid of kind of going out on their own. What kind of like advice would you offer to people having done it yourself?
Okay. I'm going to speak to the solo female travelers
Yeah.
because I know that's a big worry for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And the advice I have there is choose places. If it's your first solo traveling, choose places where you know you will feel safe and always trust your gut intuition. So if something feels off, that's not a time to be like forcing niceness. It's not a time to be nice when you actually feel like you want to run away. I think in those moments, trust your gut intuition and follow that. And also, I think staying in hostels, if maybe you're in like a younger age range, I think that would be a good option. And that's just a great place to meet people, even like doing work in like their common area. And other things is always letting people know where you are, people where your home country is. And if you have the Find My Friends option, like turn that on. And personally, my personal rule is that I didn't drink when I would solo travel. If I did, I would do the same as you, sit at a bar and like and have one drink and always have eyes on it, just because it's the reality of our world, unfortunately.
But I mean,
But not,
I get that. But is it? I mean, as in, of course it is, right? But did you ha how many how often did you feel unsafe or scared while you were solo traveling?
Yeah, so I actually went backpacking in Europe and I left at like a weird hour to catch a train. And I was by myself in an alley walking down the corridor from my Airbnb. And a guy, I think he was drunk, he actually like showed his genitals to me and I just booked it. Another time I was at a hostel and unfortunately, like one of the workers there, he like followed me to my room. And I was in my room with other people at a hostel, fortunately. So I just kept on saying like, no, I don't want to go with you anywhere. So yeah, things have happened to me, and that's where the gut intuition comes in, or just not playing nice comes in. Like standing firm in like what feels safe to you.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, look, I suppose the reason why I just challenged you a little bit on that is because, fear, there are such fear-based things that exist, and people would always talk about, is it safe? And I know that bad things happen, but I also feel like that it isn't like all the time, every day, every person, right? And again, obviously, depending on where you are, what country that you're in, I always say, don't go down a dark alleyway by yourself late at night, because that is when bad things might happen, right? But it can happen in Dublin, it can happen in Oakland, California, where you're coming in from, as much as it can happen in any other countries, right? Now, there obviously are countries that are out there that are deemed to be unsafe and that are not recommended for solo travelers, and particularly for solo female travelers, and those ones would be best to be avoided, obviously. But at the same time, I think, I would hate for people to have fear stop them from pursuing this kind of thing, because I think those experiences, while they do happen, and whilst they are valid, I think if you are safe and careful, and making sure that you have your wits about you, and that you're, if you are someone who gets drunk quickly, don't drink, like all those things that you talked about. If you are conscious and aware of your surroundings and what you're doing, then generally, I find it to be quite safe, So yeah, but also, really good advice. I mean, I think for me, my mom was always sort of checking my last active on my Facebook or my Instagram, so I always knew that someone had, because I'd be like, what if I bang and hit my head or something? How long will it be before someone finds me here if I slip in the shower or something? So kind of knowing that people know where you are, and sort of, that you're regularly checking in with people, I think is always really good as well if you're on your own. Talk to us a little bit about your journey. So I know, on your LinkedIn and on your social media, you talked about you becoming a doctor and being the first in your family to get a doctorate, and that kind of pride of your mother, and yet that sort of fulfillment for you wasn't there, and how you've kind of looked for it in other areas. So talk to us a little bit about your kind of solopreneur journey and your stepping into helping other people to find their own power as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, and just to be clear, those are definitely, I had to dig into my memory banks for those memories. My memories that comes to mind in my solo travels is definitely like all the highlights, and I would not regret, I don't regret it at all.
Yes. Good.
And so yeah, so my journey, well yeah, I think just at a young age, and like some listeners might resonate with this, is like my family was like Vietnamese war refugees, and they kind of just had this desire to succeed and survive in this country. And so the way to do that was through education. And so it was kind of implanted at an early age for me to become a doctor. And then once I achieved that, I didn't know what was next for me. And that's what kind of led me down a journey of yoga instructing and then becoming a coach. And I have just such a desire to help women in particular with their mental fitness journeys, because I think a lot of times, especially when we're single or getting into relationships that aren't the best for us, like I have gone into relationships where I meant no, but instead I said yes because I have like that people pleasing tendency. And then I had like some years where I totally avoided relationships altogether based on the bad experiences I've been through. And so now I'm really desiring to help women with some of that internal struggles of like how what are those things that maybe self-sabotaging from having like the solo experience that they're wanting, so that being solo is like with ease and flow and with like joy, and it's not a thing to look down upon, but it's during a time of period where, if it's like a lifelong decision or whatever decision it is, can it be one of play and just happiness and just like fulfilling experiences, and like what could be getting in the way of that? So like avoiding, again, like avoiding relationships or pleasing, like are you people pleasing and just like being in like these serial relationships, or restless, like just being restless, like okay, like when you're solo, instead of calming down and like taking some time for yourself, is it are you just filling your schedule back in with all these things to run away from like difficult emotions? So that's kind of what I help people go through.
Great. And I just, it's I find it really interesting, and I wonder if you'd be comfortable just even just having a chat about it, just in terms of I recently was giving a talk at an event for inspiring Indian women in Ireland, right? So it was to celebrate Indian National Day. And there was about 20 Indian women there, and everybody got up and shared their story. I was moderating this event, and the vast majority of the women that spoke to that tendency of their parents wanting them to become doctors, or wanting them to come into the medical profession or the tech industry or the science. Very little choice seemed to exist. And it was every story, almost every story, that kind of came through this idea that they didn't have a choice, and that, and actually in India, it seems to be very provincial, that there are certain, like, from if you're from Kerala, for example, the likelihood is you will be a doctor or a nurse. If you're from a different part of the country, you will be in tech, right? So it seems to be like wherever you're born into, that's where, and they become almost like exports, right? Because it's like there are opportunities outside of the country for them, that exist for them to be able to kind of make more money. And again, you inverted quote the word succeed earlier, and I suppose success is has so many different meanings, or what is success, and it's also individual. But I also had a student recently who was studying coaching. I teach coaching, and she was one of the students, and she was from originally from China. And like that, again, we did a lot of work together during the course of her kind of unlearning this idea that she had voice and that she had choice and that she had authority over the decisions that she made because she was only 25, but really her parents up to that point had been making all of those choices and decisions for her. And so she was kind of having to Okay, just a second, sorry.
Okay.
Okay, great. Can I just look you in anything you get on the course? Okay. Thanks so much. Okay, cheers. Oh Lonely. Come here. Come on. Sorry, I don't know if you could hear my dog barking. There's some weird sound thing, a soundproofing thing that happens, but the doorbell rang and she started going crazy. So sorry about
That's
that.
okay. I didn't hear it at all.
Oh, you could, yeah, it's so weird. There's like a weird soundproofing thing on Zoom. She was like barking like crazy there, but it doesn't come
I
back.
heard
I
nothing.
know, isn't
Wow.
that mad? I know. Molly, come say hi. Look, come see who was making all of this noise. Look at this little
Oh, so
munchkin.
cute.
Yeah, she's a
Hi.
good girl. And I see your little kitty there as well. Okay,
Oh, yeah.
okay, I can cut that out. But yeah, so I was saying that she, again, having that authority and that having choice and that having an ability to make those choices. I mean, do you tell me about your experience with that or what you think in terms of the work that you've done with other women, maybe in that area that you, the, you know, PI PIP BIPOC area for you. Like, is that something that you think has a long-lasting effect on women and their choices that they make?
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, I feel like I can only speak from my experience as an
Sure.
Asian American woman. And there was a lot of times growing up, and I would ask my mom, because I have a brother, why does my brother get to do this, but I can't? And she would literally say, because you're a girl.
Right.
And I would say, you should have raised me in Vietnam, which is where she's from. And so at an early age, I actually wanted to be a veterinarian because I loved my dog, Ina, my Shih Tzu. And she said, you need to treat people. And ever since, even though me and my mom had a challenging relationship some years, most years I would say, I still stuck it to that goal. And I would think about my ancestors, and my mom is a Vietnam boat refugee, so she lost some sisters on the way here. And I just thought if my mom had to go through all of that trauma, then I can do this for her and my family. And it wasn't until I became a full-fledged doctor that she said, I'm proud of you for the first time. And I was very touched by that. So I think it's like, for me, it's like the responsibility and the commitment to my family. And then when I achieved that goal, I mean, sure, for myself and my family, I didn't know what to do after. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what my interests were. I didn't know what to fill with my time now that I finish school and residency. So I think that's also part of what you said about decision making. I now had to make some new goals for myself, and I think that's the maybe the hyperachiever part of me, and maybe a lot of BIPOC people as well, where we achieve sometimes at a sacrifice of ourselves. I went through a lot of health issues. Like, I have autoimmune conditions that flared up, and that's something like we achieve at a detriment for ourselves and maybe our families. Like, I grew up not really seeing my parents because they would work and go to school at the same time. So yeah, I just felt if they did that, then I have to do this.
And what is your relationship with them like now, as or
Oh, it's good. Because I realized the realization is that they're human.
yeah.
And they're doing the best that they also can with what they have. And I accept it. I accept that sometimes these traditions and sometimes they're the negative traditions are passed down. But I think just witnessing me and my brother have all these alternative interest has really opened their eyes and to make them realize that, oh, I wish that we didn't focus so much on education and rather the focus can also be on actually enjoying life and finding pleasure and finding what actually feels good rather than studying all the time.
And it seems, like a lot, like these Indian women were incredibly successful in terms of the fields that they were all in, but they all, some of them, not all, some of them had a story of, but that wasn't making me happy. And so what I then did was I opened up a dance school, or then what I did was I, turned my hand to cookery and I, did this, or I started making clothing. Something that was always sort of like almost the opposite of what they had been studying, or what the kind of the path that they, and then they became super successful in that area too, right? So, I guess it just speak it makes me a little sad, I guess, that there are probably a huge proportion of people in this world who are living lives that aren't the lives that they want to live, and that they're living the lives of not only what their parents have chosen for them, but also that ancestral hangover, I suppose, that idea of carrying the weight of every ancestral trauma or every ancestral sacrifice on your shoulders, which is a lot of weight to carry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like to think that my ancestors are actually proud of me, and I hope like the Indian woman you met are also proud of them. Like, oh shoot, like it could have been different. And oh, like I'm so proud of you doing what makes you happy authentically now. And yeah, so I like to think that, and my mom hasn't told this to me directly, but she has told some family friends that she does wish that she did put the focus less on education and an allowance on hobbies and fun and joy more. And she really does admire like the interests that I have outside of medicine. So I think there is like an awareness that it could have been different.
And do you, and I don't know if you have children, or I know you're saying that you're married, or whether you plan on having any, but even just with your friends or the people that that idea of kind of breaking that cycle. I mean, how easy do you think that is? I mean, if you have children, or if you do have children, like, of not enforcing education, or, because I feel like it is such a transgenerational thing that exists. Even though
Yeah.
people weren't happy themselves, they just sort of continue on that way of being with their own children, right?
Yeah. I don't personally have children. I like to think that when I do, I'll be less like my parents. And I am exposing myself to other ways of being. Like, there's so many people who are successful who dropped out of college, for example, or people who didn't go to college, but they're making a very successful business, for example, in like plumbing and electrician. But those aren't things that were like offered to me. You know, it was college, but those are professions without a college degree. So my plan, and hopefully like my self-sabotaging things don't get in the way, is to see what is interesting to them and to expose them to as many things as possible. And I saw something on Instagram about parenting where don't let your kids quit on a bad day. Let them have a good day when they do that thing and ask them, do you still want to quit? Because I think quitting on a bad day could, I mean, we're going to have bad days. So I think the teaching of like resilience through that and knowing that they will come, but what matters is how long it takes for recovery and picking yourself back up. I think that's what matters. And that's what I'm hoping that I will instill in like my future children.
And they are life lessons. I mean, I remember working as a waitress in a bar years ago when I was younger, and I was about 16, and I didn't like working there anymore. And I was like, I was in a bad mood, or I was tired or something, and I just was like, I'm not gonna go. I'm quitting, and I'm not going in. And it was like my shift was supposed to start at like 8 o'clock, and it was like 7 in the evening. And I remember my dad just saying to me, look, you can absolutely, you can quit. You don't have to go and work there if you don't want to, but do it tomorrow. Like you don't, you're on that register. It's a busy night. You're going to let these people down. There's going to be other people there who are going to have to work really hard now because you aren't there. And, you can't let other people down just because you're having a bad day. And I'll always remember that, and I went to work and I don't even know if I did quit the next day. Right. But like, I think those are the important life lessons that we get from our parents that will stand to us as we kind of go through life. And I try not to ever let other people down now as an adult, but yeah, it's so I just think it's so interesting, and it's something that I kind of would like to maybe explore a little bit more, because certainly in terms of the world of coaching, my passion is to help people to fulfill their goals and to fulfill their dreams. And I often have people who come to me, having worked in a job for 20 years, and they're unhappy and they don't know how they got there, and or people who are perfectionists and they're coming with a huge amount of perfectionist tendencies that they've kind of gotten from trying to prove themselves to their parents or prove themselves in competition with their siblings and things like that, And I think as the world of coaching kind of starts to flourish a little bit more here in Ireland, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people to utilize coaching services to help them with those kinds of things. I mean, coaching is so prevalent in the USA and has been for such a long time. I mean, what is your understanding in terms of the coaching work that you do for your clients in terms of the trends or the kind of patterns that you're seeing kind of coming through?
My clients struggle with feeling capable and feeling worthy. And I'll speak to one of my specific clients. She's building her own business. She left her academic profession to start her own business. And there's just a lot of feelings of not feeling capable and not feeling enough. And it's not really coming from her. It's coming from, I'm pretty sure we all have this inner being voice within us that are like, oh, what are you doing? You're doing something wrong. Or or to direct to someone else, oh, that person's not enough, or that person's doing something wrong. Or like the circumstances, like, oh, this, I will be happy when X happens. And just these mental limiting beliefs, it holds us back. So the work I'm doing with people like her is just like how to recognize that voice and stop it in its tracks, not giving it any weight at all, and learning how to overcome it with like self-empathy and preemptively knowing that voice is going to be there, and how are we going to stop it in its tracks? How are we going to remember to stop it in its tracks? So I think that awareness that it's there and not letting it have any weight is critical. And there's like a story that I heard recently where it's a fable about somebody getting shot twice with an arrow. The first arrow, it's going to be painful and reasonably painful, but the second arrow being shot in the same place, that is suffering, and getting any suffering from that arrow is optional. So that's my work with clients, is like, how do we alleviate that second arrow so that they can tend to the first arrow and then prevent any further suffering?
It's definitely the one of the biggest things that I encounter as well, is that not being enough. When I do my limiting belief exercises with people, three women in a row had "I am not enough" as their limiting belief out loud, and it was, it's just it's just the most topical one. And I think it's just so sad that we live in a society where. And it's not just women. I mean, men also absolutely experience that feeling of not enough. I wonder, it has this always been something that people have felt, or is it just because of the society that we live in now that there is so much choice, there is so much exposure across, media and social media, and that we're always sort of maybe comparing ourselves with others and feeling that we're not doing enough or being enough, or whether people have always felt that they weren't enough. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that it's always been present, But it's gotten worse because I think there are studies where like teenage girls spending time on social media, they have like body, they don't accept their bodies, or like, yes, like what you said, they're comparing, we're comparing each other. But I think it's always been present because some of like the yoga, ancient yogic philosophy is basically learning to quieting those thoughts and remembrance that we are whole and complete and that we are all divine. And it's that, it's like the remembrance. It's not filling things up to be whole. It's no, you are whole. You started whole and you just forgot. We just forgot. Yeah.
It's just funny because I've been watching Call the Midwife a lot. I'm in this warp of watching this TV show. It's a British TV show. I don't know if you're aware, if you know of it, but it's set in the 19 sort of 50s and 60s in the UK, just coming out of World War II. And you know, my goodness, the amount of advances that we've made since then even is just, you know, incredible. But you know, the people were very like formulaic in the jobs that they had. So they were either they worked down at the docks, or they were, you know, like a carpenter or a tradesperson, or the women didn't work. Women weren't allowed to work, right? Unless you had this vocation, which was like this midwifery or being a nun or something like that. And I just feel like, you know, people were in those jobs and they did those jobs to put food on the table and to earn a good wage. And they didn't really kind of expect anything more, you know, I suppose. Now, it's not to say that a lot of them weren't extremely unhappy and they had to work really hard. And a lot of them were drinking their earnings in the pub and, you know, not being nice partners. And there was domestic abuse and all of those kinds of things. So maybe they weren't happy. Maybe they also all didn't feel. But I just kind of wonder if the amount of choice that we now all have is what is creating this idea of not enoughness. Because some, you know, previous to the sort of the last 40 years, you just did what you were supposed to do, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think it's like doing what you're supposed to do. Women were in charge of child rearing and taking care of the home. And what you said earlier about we all have different definitions of success. And nowadays, yes, we have more freedom and more choice. So our definitions for success can mean all sorts of things now. And the work that we each have to do is discerning what is it for us? Is our definitions of success based on what we're seeing in others? Like what our next person, like next neighbor has, or is it intrinsic to ourselves and what genuinely will make us happy? Or do we have to let go of, usually it's like the material, like what people materially have, like, do we have to let that go a little bit, or even like climbing the corporate ladder or being the best in the field? Like, do we have to let that go? Is that like some hyperachiever coming in and what you say about being the perfectionist? Do we have to let that go a bit? And yeah, I think it's some soul searching. Like, what is it for us that means success in this modern age?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mentioned it briefly on another podcast episode, but I recently heard someone talking about, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how, you know, for most people in the Western world, for most people in privileged positions, which I would describe you and I as being, you know, we have kind of gone up that ladder of those hierarchy of needs, you know. So our physiological needs are met, our safety and security for the most part is met, love and belonging, those relationships that we work on cultivating with family or with friends or with partners or whatever. And I think in the Western world, we're sort of really at that self-esteem phase now, where everybody's sort of working on their confidence and their achievement and, you know, how to be unique and how to be authentic. And we're only one step away from this sort of self-actualization, this Buddha-like state that Maslow kind of said that we're all reaching for. And I think when you look across social media, you know, for I think, you know, post-war and, you know, the ways in which we have as a world have progressed, I think, you know, we were always in that sort of safety and security phase. We're probably coming into it again now with the state of the world. Who knows, right? But I definitely think there's that kind of that self-actualization point of like, why are we all here? What is it all for? What is the meaning of life? And I think we probably have a lot of time to think about that in comparison to, say, the 50s or the 60s, where they didn't even have time to think about it. They literally had to go work, put food on the table, look after the kids, 8 kids, 10 kids, 20 kids running around the place. There wasn't that time. But now I think we do have a lot of time to think about that. And I think that's where that's a lot of those insecurities and those feelings of not enoughness are coming from, because we're all trying to make our mark on this world, right? Like the audacity of that, isn't that crazy? That we're all trying to leave a legacy for the 8 billion people that exist on the planet. But everybody is so, I think, in their own ego and in their own head and in their own id. And I think, potentially the idea of social media, everybody can be a broadcaster, everybody can have a vlog, everybody can have an audience, in a way that, we didn't really have before. And I think that's, kind of perpetuating this sense of like low self-esteem in people,
Yeah, I think it's like we have a lot of access to each other and we make our lives so public. And so it's for me in my marriage, I mean, we have marriage issues still, and it's fine. But in my mind, everybody has a great marriage on Instagram. So usually I'm like an avoider. I try to deal with things on my own, but I'm making it a point to reach out to my friends, especially, and I reach out to my friends in happy marriages for some advice, and they offer me a new perspective. And these are the same friends who look like they have the perfect marriage. And when they share their problems with me, it really offers me a new perspective that, okay, it's okay to have bad times. It's just, again, like, can we bounce back from that? And I used to judge myself like, oh gosh, I'm such a terrible person. That's probably why I'm having these marriage problems. And it's not that I'm a terrible person, but it's that those parts of me that are triggered when conflict arises, because I come from like a divorced family. So it's like, oh, it's like that trigger. Oh, it's happening. But really, can I just sit with that for a bit? And is that really, is does this mean that it's really over? I'm like the queen of worst case scenarios. So the little bit of conflict, I'm just like, it's done. It's over. But it's not true. Like, I just have to realize, and that's like the avoidant, hypervigilant part of me. I just have to realize that this is a normal part of life and relationships, even friendships, family ships, anything. And I think what you talked about with the Maslow's hierarchy, that piece of self-actualization, it's like, I think part of that is also recognizing when I'm being triggered in like my important relationships and learning how to grow through that together so that we both can be in this relationship together in like the best way for ourselves. And I mean this with like my husband and even my mom, even till this day, I'm like getting better and better at like communicating with her, like what's hurtful, so that we can both grow together and be pleasant, like genuinely pleasant when we're together.
And I think that's great, because it thinks, I think, I have surrounded myself an awful lot with people who have gone down that personal development journey and who are open to kind of coaching or open to, listening to podcasts and, but I think that is the key. It's creating an awareness. It's looking at how you act or react to certain situations. It's giving yourself the tools that you need in order to learn, what is the best way forward. And becoming more aware of who you are, what you are, where you want to go, but also understanding the people that are around you also have their needs and their, levels of having to be understood. But I think that still so many people don't know an awful lot about this. And, when you were referring to kind of attachment styles there, we do attachment styles when it comes to relationships. There's been a lot of talk about that. There's been a lot of talk about love languages and, how people relate to each other in that way. And also, you touched on a couple of different cognitive distortions there. So some things that I would teach, from a coaching perspective, catastrophizing and all or nothing thinking or black and white, perfectionism, all of these things are simply cognitive distortions that once we create an awareness around them and we know that they're a tendency or that they are a trigger for us, then we can start to actually go, is it serving me best to be this way, or can I make it? Can I change it and can I do it something else? But even as coaches, even as aware as you and I both are, we still will do these things because we are human. And it's not that, you don't, you none of us, you don't get to that self-actualization. I'm a terrible catastrophizer as well. I'm always like going from not to worst case scenario. But I think I'm getting better at it because I'm aware of it and I am conscious of it, that it's not a helpful way to be. And so I am getting much better at it. And I think that's what a lot of people don't know as well, is that if they are doing something repeatedly that's not bringing them happiness or joy, they can change it rather than label themselves with whatever it is. So people will go, oh, that's just the way I am. I am a catastrophizer. And it's like, well, no, you're not. It's just your reaction to something, and you can absolutely change it if you want to. And I think that's what's the exciting thing about where we are as coaches in this world, is helping people to go through that process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I love that you have this platform and that we're having this conversation. If people are listening to podcasts, they're usually interested in personal growth. And there was a time when I would binge on personal growth podcasts and books for a long time before I hired a personalized approach with a coach or a therapist or an astrologist. So many different ways to
Yeah,
get
totally.
help.
Oh, I love a tarot. I love a good tarot read or a medium.
Yes.
I would have been more going to psychic mediums than therapists, in my 30s. I'm like,
Yes.
what's in the stars for me? But it is a form of therapy, I guess, in a way, isn't it?
Yes, I also went to a medium, and every time I look back on things, I just think about that session and what it unlocked for me, and what you said about like the triggers and Maslow's hierarchy. It's like the triggers is our, I would say, kind of our training to be in our self-actualizing process or journey, that this is like the earth school. This is our training. Like every time we get triggered, that's training for us to do something different this time and not beat ourselves down if we don't get it right then and there. But just celebrating also, if you have awareness in that moment, that's something to celebrate, because I think a lot of us have a hard time having even awareness. And then the next time, maybe choose a different path. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. Like, I think I was very aware when me and my husband had conflict, and I couldn't stop myself from saying hurtful things, but I was aware I was doing it. And then the next time, instead of saying those hurtful things, I said, you know what? I'm going to decompress and I will return to this conversation when I've had some time to myself. And then it's just like kind of stepwise. And then once that is done, another thing's going to come up and it's okay. And again, it's training and it's like our arena. And what can we learn from this, and how can we be better next time?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the exciting thing is that we are people who experience growth, and that is what personal development, and some people say, oh, self-development, personal development, it's such a cringy kind of thing. But like, it's not. It's called being a human. It's called, being a better human as you go through life and ensuring that you can have better relationships and that you yourself are happy. And, I've worked with a lot of people on, they will complain about a parent or a friend or a partner and say, they're not responding to me as I want them to, as I want them to. And so my question is always like, well, is there something you can do differently? Like, and sometimes people feel, well, the thing I can do differently is I can give in to their demands or whatever, right? And we don't want to do that necessarily. We don't want to become a doormat or become someone that is always compromising ourselves. But what we can do is go, can you look at a different response? And will that different response not only fulfill their need to some degree, but also give you a better outcome than the one where you were going to have an argument with them, right? Because having an argument with them is going to prevent you from doing the thing that you want to do, and it's going to have a hangover, it's going to take days or whatever to clear. Or is it a case of actually another approach? And it does involve compromise. But I think people are so quick to react that they don't often like sort of see that. But I mean, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I've an interest in this area, but I think the more I work with people, and I have been working as a coach for 7 years now, it's the same patterns are coming up time and time again. It's the same things that people are experiencing, no matter whether they're male, female, what age they are, what their socioeconomic background that they are, what education level they have, what work level they have. Those things that they deal with are still just the same. It's
Yeah.
just being human.
Yes. And it's funny because I thought the problems that me and my husband have is just unique to us, but it's the attachment style, like the avoidant and the anxious people find each other and they get into a relationship with each other. And just like what you said about doing something different so that we're not both on the defense when you're in conflict. And because once we're on the both on the defense, it's like there's no solutions moving forward. So it's like, how can we each take care of ourselves when we're in conflict so that when we come back, there's some empathy for each other and like a mutual understanding that there's a team here to move forward and what is the best path forward so that there's less conflict and so that this isn't an issue again in the future.
And I think that applies, to any relationship, whether that be a marriage, a partnership, or a parental friendship, all of those kinds of things. I think that's really sage advice, I suppose, in that regard. But I'm conscious of time. We've been talking for a whole hour now, Vivian, and it's been such an interesting conversation, exploring such a range of topics. And I'm really glad that you reached out and that we were able to have this conversation and kind of look at the similarities that exist across cultures and across, continents, and realize that, a lot of what we have going on in our lives is choice, to some degree, and that if our lives, are being maybe controlled by other people, that there is always that light at the end of the tunnel, and that there is always options as you move forward, as you continue to grow and you can step into your own power and your own truth, which is something that I love to do. But it's been really lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Ariana. This is so much fun.
Thank you.